The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Nicolas Maduro is set to face a New York City courtroom today after his capture by the U.S. military for alleged drugs and weapons offenses. But back in Venezuela, the mood is muted, as we heard earlier on the program, as uncertainty prevails about what the future might hold. Meanwhile, its neighbors in Latin America are raising concerns about any attempt at U.S. governmental control of natural resources. For more on this, Alan McPherson, Freeman Professor of History and Director of the Center for the Study of Force and Diplomacy at Temple University, joins us now. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, let's talk about what you believe is at the heart of this action by the United States.
It seems increasingly that petroleum is at the heart of it. The months of actions to sort of harass and isolate the president, you know, on the grounds of him helping drug cartels seems to be sort of falling apart. I mean, it's clear that he probably did do those things, but they're not particularly important in terms of Venezuela's role in drugs. And so when President Trump spoke in his press briefing yesterday, he talked only about petroleum. So that seems to be where the bulk of the action going forward is going to happen.
I mean, if he was to take the drug business seriously, the opportunity would be for him to go into Beijing and take President Xi on the basis that fentanyl, which is poisoning the United States, is largely coming from China.
Sure. I mean, he's never going to do that, obviously.
No, but that's the parallel. You know, if you're really worried about fentanyl, that's where you've got to look.
Yeah. And even if you're just really worried about drugs coming from Venezuela, you're going to do more than take out the president who's giving passports and safe passages. You're going to actually attack the cartels in Venezuela. And there's no talk of doing this whatsoever. Now there's no talk. There's no talk anymore about drugs in Venezuela. The problem's been solved because of one man. And that just doesn't make sense.
Now, tell me about the vice president who's now standing in the presidency and may well be there for some time. What do we know about her? And is it possible that she has actually privately done a deal with the United States?
Oh, many things are possible. She might have done a deal with the United States. She might be lying to the United States. She might be lying to her colleagues. Clearly, there's some inconsistencies there because, I mean, she does have, you know, her career suggests that she is a dedicated Maduro Chavista follower, but she's also a relatively decent manager of the economy. And so there's room to think that she might be trying to sort of salvage the legacy of Chavez and Maduro by making some sort of deal with the Americans, maybe telling them, listen, you leave us in power, we will make sure you have access to all the petroleum that you want. You can take over the nationalized petroleum, industry. But we sort of keep all of our benefits in terms of running the rest of the society. And then we delay elections as long as possible.
Now, do we know anything about her attitude towards Maduro's repression? I mean, is she likely to continue along those lines, keeping political prisoners in jail? Or is there anything to tell us about her background and how she might behave in that regard?
I mean, she doesn't have a background in security or in repression itself. She's got more of a background in law and in economics. She's done a relatively decent job at sort of stabilizing the economy in recent years, bringing down inflation. So that might be her main concern. But of course, she's not the only leader. She's not the only one who gets to make the decisions. And so you've got the military, you've got security forces, you've got all the other ministers in the cabinet. I'm sure they've got a lot of influence on her. They probably are the ones who pushed her to make the strong statement she made late Saturday, saying that Maduro was indeed still the president. Now she seems to be walking this back and saying, well, okay, maybe he's not the president, maybe I am, but we still want to run the country as if he were president.
Now, what would the attitude of the armed forces be? I mean, have they any appetite for conflict with the United States if Trump is forced by circumstance to put boots on the ground?
I mean, they're in a very difficult situation. I mean, on one hand, I'm sure that they know that they can't actually defeat the United States military if it decides to launch a massive second wave, as the president has threatened. But at the same time, you know, these are dedicated nationalists, and they've also, you know, they can't be seen to be backing down to a foreign force. I mean, what would the American military do, right? The American military would never stand for a foreign force just saying, oh, you know, we're going to run your country. So there's a strong nationalism in Venezuela. They've got to put up at least a front. It's also important to understand that the military is not like the military in most Western democracies, which is paid by the government. These folks own sections of the economy. They control sections of the economy. And so if they're going to be driven out of power, at least in the military, they need to know that they're going to keep the goodies that they've always had under Maduro and Chavez.
Now, the question of any conflict on the ground, I don't know much about the terrain of Venezuela, but I mean, are we talking about the terrain of a Vietnam rather than the terrain of an Iraq?
I think it would be neither of those, because it would probably be very largely sort of an urban battle. There would be choke points here and there. Petroleum would be very important, as it is right now. So a lot of it is also at sea. So I don't think you would have massive amounts of guerrilla organizations or sort of terrorist organizations taking power in the countryside, that sort of thing. It's not a battle for those kinds of groups. It's really just for the reins of government itself, and probably, you know, maybe where the cartels are in Venezuela. But it's also a very vast country. I mean, it's the size, I think it's twice the size of California. It's got 30 million people. So I'm pretty sure that the U.S. United States military is telling the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, listen, this is not a good idea to try to occupy this country. It's going to be probably harder than trying to occupy Iraq.
Does it look like they've learned some lessons from Iraq? And we know so many American lives were lost pointlessly in that particular war, but that they're leaving, if you like, the civilian and the institutional infrastructure in place deliberately, because we saw what happened when they outlawed the Ba'ath Party and police forces and civil servants all ran for their lives, as they thought, and everything collapsed in Iraq.
No, that's a great question. One thing that the United States should certainly not do, it appears they're not poised to do this, is de-Ba'athification or firing everyone in the military. I mean, those are the two big mistakes they made in Iraq, is getting rid of anybody who had any connection with the government, and then firing something like 500,000 armed men who now no longer had jobs but had guns, and so they joined militias. I think that somebody like Rubio is smart enough to know that history. And for now, what he's saying is that the United States wants to decide policy from boats off of the shore, and then act as a sort of ongoing threat so that Venezuelans actually carry out that policy. I mean, that's a lesson learned from Iraq, but it's also a very risky, very risky strategy.
Now, what about the involvement of Iran with Venezuela, China with Venezuela, Russia with Venezuela? What do you think will be the ultimate stances taken by those three countries?
I mean, I think you're going to see pro forma declarations that the United States should respect the sovereignty of every country in the world, and the Venezuelan people have the right to decide their form of government and elections and so on and so forth. Their partnership with Venezuela will probably be harmed to a certain extent, but they want different things in a different, you know, in different, you know, points, because the Iranians, I think, have a relatively small footprint there. So do the Russians. It's mostly military exercises, selling of military equipment. The ones who have the biggest stake really are the Chinese, because they receive so much petroleum. But frankly, I just don't think the Chinese are going to be worried, because when you pump petroleum out, whether it's an American company or any other company or the Venezuelan government, they sell it on global markets. And if the Chinese are there to buy it, they will continue buying it. So I don't think the Chinese are worried that oil is being cut off to them. In fact, probably more petroleum is going to be pumped out of the country, and the Chinese might actually get more petroleum than they've ever gotten. But other countries will also get some.
Now, there's one theory that this all goes back to the creation, if you like, of the petrodollar, with the agreement that Henry Kissinger made with the Saudis all those years ago, that all oil products will be sold in dollars, which means that people have to buy dollars to buy oil in all its forms, and that this is what the Americans really want to control, the vast reserves. If you like, a Saudi Arabia on its own doorstep, they want to control that so that they can maintain the supremacy of the petrodollar.
Yeah, I don't know about petrodollars, but it certainly makes sense that the Americans want to control as much petroleum as possible in Venezuela. It's got the largest oil reserves in the world, larger than the Saudi ones. American companies have, you know, up until the 1970s, were dominant in that country. I mean, they did develop the industry in the early 20th century. They were always dominant. They were nationalized in the 70s, but they stayed there. The only foreign company there now is Chevron, which is an American company, and it's pumping out about a quarter of the oil there. It's not making much money. It obviously wants to make a lot more, and a lot of other American companies, I'm sure, are now presently lobbying Trump, and he's got them in his ear saying, this is what you want. My sense is that if there's ever a U.S. force that lands in Venezuela, the first thing it's going to do is secure oil fields and oil refineries.
Now, we should look to the region more broadly and who might be in Trump's sights next. He's already mentioned Panama. He's mentioned Cuba. There's extraordinary stuff going on in terms of, the Colombia war on drugs, which has largely been seen to fail. Then there was the Honduran president who was indicted and convicted in the United States and then pardoned by Trump. I mean,
yes.
It's confusing.
It is confusing. The one clear pattern is that he's only going after governments that are on the left so far. I mean, he's now openly saying that maybe we'll do something against the president of Colombia, accusing him directly of being a drug dealer. That's an extraordinary thing for a president of the United States to say. This man has not been indicted. I've not seen any evidence that he's a drug dealer, but he is a man of the left. He's been a critic of Trump. I think that's probably the basis for this threat. There's also a threat now coming out against Cuba, again against Greenland. So I think Trump is just saying whatever comes to mind, whatever he's asked about. He's just sort of feeling his power now that he's sort of successfully overthrown one government. Who knows if the rest of the government, if Rubio and Hegseth are going to follow up on those words. But for now, there's a lot of bluster.
And the president of Colombia, I think I saw a piece over the weekend where he described the Trump administration as an administration of pedophiles and the effrontery of them to take over in Venezuela.
Right. I mean, this is sort of the same dynamic you see with Delcy Rodriguez, is that these are nationalists and they absolutely have to win the favor of their own countrymen first. That's what they really care about. And so it might not be wise to say something like this, but it's done for domestic, political consumption. And they have to put up a brave face in front of threats from essentially this renewed naked imperialism coming from Washington.
I suppose the final question is, if he gets involved in too many fronts, whatever about Greenland, how likely that would be to go against a colleague in NATO, although with Trump anything is possible, but getting involved in Central and South America to a huge degree in order to assert U.S. dominance over the region, is there a case that if he goes on too many fronts, he will inevitably fail?
Oh, of course he'll inevitably fail. It depends, obviously, how extended the U.S. military is. And hopefully cooler heads will prevail in Washington saying, Mr. President, if we do this, we've got to take troops out of here, troops out of there, Asia, the Middle East, and so on. It's going to cost a lot of money. He's saying it's not going to cost the American people anything. That's clearly not true. And so I think he's going to get a lot of pushback from inside his bureaucracy, but also from the Congress, from others in the Republican Party who are going to say, if you overextend yourself and you go into places where we clearly don't have much of a stake for national interests, we're going to abandon you, right? And we're going to lose the 2026 elections.
And the last question really, Alan, is Trump in charge? Is this all his idea or are there other minds behind it?
I mean, he's clearly agreed to do this, and I think he's been persuaded. But I don't think it was his initiative. I think it's more the three men behind the throne. It's the Secretary of State who wants to overthrow Maduro, has wanted to. He wants to harm Cuba. It's Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, who wants to show the strength of the military. That's all he talked about at the press conference. I think it's also Stephen Miller, who's more of a domestic advisor, but he very much wants to stop drugs from coming into the United States and stop immigrants, all immigrants, especially immigrants of color, from coming into the United States. All three men were literally standing behind Trump yesterday at the press conference. And I think those are the architects of this entire plan.
Alan McPherson, Freeney Professor of History and Director of the Center for Study of Force and Diplomacy at Temple University. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.